All right, well, I guess we'll get started. I'm David Seale from Tulane University, and we'll be talking about work that we were doing in Syria prior to the outbreak of conflict in Aleppo last fall. So it's HIV-STI service provision in Syria, a study of contradictions. I just want to acknowledge this is funded by the National Institute of Health and my co-authors. I was hoping Dr. Fouad could actually be here to present, but unfortunately was unable to secure visas to get here. Also Dr. Maziak, Dr. Ward, and Eamon Ibrahim, who was my project coordinator in Syria. We're supposed to put this up in our talk, so I'm meeting my requirements. All right, so, you know, the Middle East remains relatively a low HIV-STI seroprevalence area, but there are a lot of factors in the Middle East that we have seen in preceding other outbreaks in the world, whether it be China, Russia, India, in that you have opening of borders to Western tourism and immigration, glowing global economy, pockets of poverty amongst marginalized groups, increased exposure to Western culture and sexuality, a youth-dominated population, meaning under 30, and increased visibility of commercial sex workers, men who have sex with men, and injection drug users. And often when we've seen these configurations in the world, we've seen outbreaks of disease social transition. Okay? So NIH had this thought that there was a window of opportunity to actually try to prevent a major epidemic outbreak instead of like we've done historically where we're treating crises and epidemics after they've already been established. So in order to do this, we wanted to document the range of HIV-STI risk behavior and look into factors and determinants of that behavior. And also looking at structural barriers to impede HIV-STI prevention efforts. Okay? So NIH in 2006 convened a three-day summit in Egypt to start talking about a strategic plan for the Middle East, North Africa region. From there, they developed a program announcement to develop HIV prevention infrastructure and conduct pilot studies in the MENA region. We then established a partnership between the Syrian Center for Tobacco Studies, which was an NIH-funded center in Syria in Aleppo. It, about 2 years ago, was named by Fogarty. Their investigators had produced more manuscripts per dollar awarded than any place in the Middle East. Not necessarily the most in number, but per dollar. So it's a very competent research center, and the University of Memphis. And we were the first applicant to ever be funded under this announcement. Okay. So our study had three, and the funny part is we actually weren't even at the first meeting. Because I have some long-term friends that had worked at the Syrian Center, and I do the HIV, so we said, hey, this is our chance to finally work together. So it was the first time I remember the NIH saying, how'd you guys come together and write this grant when you had never met? Well, it's because we had these other sort of connections. But we had three aims: to identify risk and preventive behaviors and the moderators that would need to be addressed. We wanted to look at people living with HIV, people seeking STI-related services, female commercial sex workers, men who have sex with men, and injection drug users, to document feasibility of strategies to access and enroll these groups, and to really look at how we needed to word our quantitative risk behavior survey. We did this with the full blessing of the local top Islamic scholar in Aleppo, and we had meetings with him, and one of the things he just said is, I may not be able to endorse everything you do, but my silence will let people know it's okay for this project to exist. So that was a relationship. He also wrote a letter of support for our grant application and had reviewed it, so it was something that we had a really cool partnership with. We were able to conduct 21 interviews with providers of HIV and STI services in Damascus and Aleppo. We wanted to look at structural and systemic factors impacting access to treatment and delivery of HIV-related education, testing, and treatment. We wanted to learn about how the clinics worked and details about their standard operating procedures, looking at barriers and facilitators of testing treatment, and get recommendations about intervention content. Okay. The interviews were collected during spring 2011 and were content coded by two raters. So, some of the key findings, we had distinct differences emerge with regard to HIV versus STI testing and treatment. In Syria, they were handled as independent sort of projects. STI providers did not do HIV testing, and the HIV prevention services did not do STI testing. OK, Okay. There are also key differences in the standard practice in public versus private STI clinics. Okay. One of the things they said in Aleppo is that people who suspect they have been infected with an STI are much more likely to seek treatment than people who suspect they have been infected with HIV because of the differential stigmas attached with those two types of infections. And that most physicians do not ask STI patients to get an HIV test unless there's a strong suspicion that they should, that they have HIV. So it's not part of a standard sort of process that's much more common to encourage here in the US. By law, all HIV/AIDS patients are tested and treated exclusively by the National AIDS Program, people are rarely referred to a private clinic. HIV confirmatory and testing adhere to pretty good standardized protocols for risk assessment, information provision, and treatment follow-up, and compatible to the sort of standards that we see internationally for these procedures. They have high standards of privacy and confidentiality. All records are stored in electronic form, and they rarely violate patient privacy, and usually only with patient permission. Like for some people, they needed to receive a military service exemption, but then that's by a patient request. Okay, and it's pretty rigorous. I visited the clinics, and it appeared to be what they were saying, very legitimate. Okay. In contrast, STI testing and treatment occur in private and public clinics. People prefer to seek their treatment in private clinics, but a lot can't afford it. Most physicians treat their patients based on clinical manifestations. Rarely do they actually use lab testing for specimen testing. Genital warts are the main STIs that they see there in Syria. The providers, one of the reasons they didn't want to use the labs, they said they're badly outdated, they lack skilled technicians, and they have high rates of false negatives, so they prefer to treat symptomology. Public clinics serve primarily low-income males, followed standardized protocols, including educational counseling, but were not real concerned with privacy and confidentiality. The private clinics tended to serve primarily middle to upper-income patients of both genders. Protocols vary widely across the clinics and focused on treatment only, not much prevention or education. High emphasis was given to patient privacy and confidentiality, reflecting social stigma concerns. The providers in the private clinics often said they did not follow mandated reporting requirements, that they would often put false diagnoses in the patient's files so as to not have that reflected, and that they often provide misinformation to sexual partners of STI patients about why they might be referred for partner notification. So a very different sort of standard than we saw in the private clinics. Female patients preferred to see female doctors, understandably. Male patients, they said, really didn't bother so much with whether it was a female or a male doctor. They think the stigmas associated, as we mentioned before, with HIV are much stronger than STI patients. And most people in Syria, the doctor said that HIV is a death sentence. Okay? And again, they don't have as good of some of the treatment regimens that we do here. And many thought that HIV patients should be quarantined. A private physician said they rarely asked about a patient's sexual behavior in detail, even if they have an STI, in order to avoid embarrassing the patient. In contrast, they felt patients had no problem talking about the sort of physical, medical aspects of their infection. So conclusion, we concluded there was a need for increased connection between HIV and STI services and use of standardized testing and treatment protocols. STI patients in public clinics receive better treatment, but at the cost of privacy, stigma remains a challenge to quality patient care. As we all know, there's a lot of conflict in Syria, and when Aleppo became part of that contract, we had to discontinue the study in September last year. We were in the middle of AIM 2, working with our interviews with HIV positive and STI patients. And so one of the things I've been having a lot of email back and forth with Dr. Fouad is that, in many ways, our findings at this point may reflect a historical pre-conflict context rather than have future utility, unfortunately, for future efforts in the country, because no one really knows what the state of the country will be when it is resumed to some normalcy. However, we're hoping, and I've been involved in this MENA work group in the Midwest, that a lot of these findings have very similar to other countries in the region, and so that they may have some benefit for other people that are in startup phase and maybe dealing with similar types of things. Okay, so I will stop there. Thank you.